And you know, it just feels so nice to be sharing all this with someone who's actually been through all this. Like, Chungi, I mean, I don't know, like, the generation now, whether they would understand what Chungi
is. I don't even know what you call it in English. Like.
Yeah, no clue. I don't know. Rubber flower.
For many years, thousands of Nepalis have been moving overseas with the hopes of a better education, job, and lifestyle. Some find success in conventional fields, while some carve their own paths. Who is to say one is better than the other? Success is a journey, not a destination. So come on this journey with me, where we connect with our Nepali communities living overseas and explore their conventional and unconventional paths. My name is Sankalpa Gurung, and this is Hamro Yatra.
Welcome to the 7th episode of Hamro Yatra. Today we have with us the ever-charming Janki Poon. Janki works as a nurse practitioner in acute medicine and is currently studying to do her master's. She is one of the co-founders of Hempnath, an ethical and sustainable brand that curates bags made from hemp. And oh my god, I absolutely love them. I bought one myself and it's so cute, functional and eco-friendly. Honestly, what's not to love? Anyways, Janki also works behind the scenes in You Inspire TV, Discover Your Gift with her husband. She is an integral part of the Nepali community here in the UK, and I'm sure everyone who knows her will commend her work ethic and positivity. In this episode, we talk about Janki's journey from the village Marichor, Nepal to UK. As it is with most of our guests, her journey hasn't been clear-cut. From having to transition from speaking in her mother tongue, Kham, to Nepali and English, witnessing the beginning of the civil war in Nepal, redoing her degree, Janki is perseverant and has this insatiable drive to be the best version of herself. As always, if you enjoyed these conversations, please share with your friends and family. Remember to follow our Instagram page at hamro.yatra for updates. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. And leave us a 5-star review if you're feeling extra generous. Welcome to Hamro Yatra, Janki. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much for inviting me. To be honest, I'm quite surprised and I'm not sure what to expect because I've never been invited to an interview and this is my first ever one. So thank you for the opportunity.
Oh, you're most welcome. I'm pretty sure like a lot of people will benefit from hearing your journey as well.
I hope so. Like,
as you probably know, we start with like a few questions, just random questions. Yeah. So if you had any superpower, what would that be?
This is interesting because I've always wanted to have some sort of power where I could sort of just say stop and, you know, like the violence and the war and the crimes happening in the world would stop. So I suppose like maybe, you know, just through a snap of a finger, you could sort of stop that. I don't know if that superpower exists or not, yeah.
It's your superpower. You can choose whatever you want.
That's what I would want to have.
And so if you could have any cuisine for the rest of your life, what would that be?
I think I would still say Nepalese food. And mainly I love sukuti.
So, yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's a new one. None of our guests have mentioned sukuti so far.
Probably most of them have probably mentioned momo.
Momo dal bhat.
Yeah, I think sukuti and bhat probably, yes. Yeah.
Yeah. If you could go back into any of like Nepali historical moments, what would that be?
I think I would just go back to, I mean, I don't know if I would want to, but, you know, like sometimes you kind of think like, oh, I wish I was in that era. You know, when there used to be like Saha dynasty and then the kingship and all that. So I just wonder like what was life, you know, around that time.
Yeah. So let's get started from way back when, you know. How were you as a child? What was your childhood like?
I think childhood, the question that you've, you know, just asked me, I think it's a very important question. And I do believe in the journey, the story that you've had during your childhood, because I kind of feel like the childhood that I have had is, you know, is me today. That is basically the foundation. But basically, I was born in like Rolpa in Marichor, so it's a village in Rolpa. And I would say my childhood was beautiful, very memorable. Mm. As a child, I used to be quite shy and quiet person. But I think it's mainly because, you know, you're brought up in that environment where you are, as a girl especially, you're meant to be like, don't talk much and, you know, just listen and obey the orders. So, I think...
Barta noho, utoni noho.
Or, you know, like, don't answer back. So I think I was very sort of obedient in that way. I don't think I was, like, mischievous or, like, I don't know, trying to... disobey the rules. So nothing as such. But I remember, like, as childhood, going back to my childhood memory, I think my mom's played a very vital role. Because, you know, dad being in the army, they used to come home only, in 3 years' time, I think. So you spend maybe like a month or two, and then that was it. So my mom's love, my grandfather's wisdom, my my grandmom's love, and so all those things, that's what reminds me, and mostly the village life in Marichor in Rolpa.
Mm. How long were you there for?
To be honest, I was actually there for until I was like 9 years, I think. Okay. 9 or 10 years. So I actually did my primary schools in the village, and then obviously, you know, we didn't used to have nursery or anything and such. You would just from class.
Just go to school.
Go to school. That's it. That was the main thing. And then, so, you know, so we have our own mother tongue. So we speak Ham. And then I remember, this is so funny, like in this school, so we all used to speak in Kham. Because that's what your mother tongue is. And then... we used to be told, like, okay, try and talk in Nepali. Don't use during the class, don't use your calm, speak in Nepali. So that was our, you know, like in
Kathmandu later on.
So you would say, like, don't talk in Nepali, you know, talk in English.
Speak in English, you need to
improve your English. But whereas in Marichor, that was basically like, you know, speak in Nepalese. So you can improve your Nepali. Yeah. So, That was the school, but it was fun. And we used to go swim in the river during our lunch break, and, you know, all that.
Very carefree.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. Very, very much.
Do you still speak
Kham? The mother tongue. Yes. So I can speak and I understand, like, 100%.
Wow. Yeah. Like my, because we've got our Gurung language as well.
Yeah.
And we didn't grow up speaking Gurung much. Mm-hmm. Like if my mom and my grandmoms, they had to like say something about us while we were still there, then they would start speaking in Gurung, so we wouldn't understand. So just in that as well, like I can understand a few words here and there, just like try to make sense of what they're trying to say and get the gist of it.
Yes,
but if I had to speak myself, or if somebody speaks very quickly, then I'm just like, okay, I can't understand anymore.
Yeah, I guess like it just depends on, because obviously, you know, my mom, my grandparents, everybody, and the whole entire village, that was the language. So that's how that's where I grew up, and that's how I learned the language. And then I don't know, for some reason, like I've never
kept it.
Yeah.
Left. Oh, that's good. Yeah.
Interesting, isn't it?
All the languages are disappearing, so it's good that you actually can still speak that.
Definitely. Definitely. And I'm proud that I can still, talk.
So you said you were 9 or 10 till you were in the village. So does that mean then you all moved to UK after that?
So we moved to Brunei. So, but before moving to Brunei, like, just, you know, because, you know, you probably know as well anyway, like, Rolpa is very known for, like, Maoist, and that's where the Maoist started, and there's all this talk about that. You probably have heard it, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's the birthplace of Maoist. That's how it's very well known for. So, yeah, I actually do remember, even as a child of 8, 9 years old, so when the revolution started, I even remember... like my granddad, he was being taken by the police to prison, you know, because he was just accused of being a Maoist.
Oh,
and
God.
I remember like police officers just going around the entire village and taking like the men, the household, you know, the men and the young boys to the prison and accusing them of being Maoist. And so all that was happening. And then I think later on, like, most of the men from the village, they started like disappearing because of all those accusations and, you know, being taken to the prison. Some of them were there in the prison for like years and years. They never got out. So I think from my side, my side, I think it's just the exploitation from the political powers and, you know, people from that side. From what I've seen, and especially, you know, what I saw with my granddad as well, like he was beaten up and all that in front of me. I think that's how the revolution started, you know, when people say like, oh, Maoist did this and that. And, you know, I can't talk about how it's now in the situation, all that. But that's, as a child, that's something I've witnessed as well. So that was a bit not so nice part as a child. But I think those things were starting, and then we moved out. So we moved out as in we went to Brunei from there. So I was in Brunei for about a year, and I went to Gorkha Children's School. That was the only Nepalese school there in Syria.
I was actually born in Syria.
Really?
But I have no recollection because I was born in Syria, and then we moved to Hong Kong till I was 2 or 3, I think, which I don't recall anything of either. It's just the photos that I have. And then my mom was like, okay, I can't do this moving. And then she had no family there. So she's like, I'm just going to go back to Nepal and then just grow up in Nepal.
I think it's difficult, isn't it, for moms, especially like when they are in completely different environment, they don't know anyone. And yes, I think auntie made the right move going back to Nepal. But yeah, so life in Brunei was good, but it was a bit hard for me because, you know, like going from Marichor, like rural, like village, where I was learning to speak in Nepali, to going to school of English, and that was so difficult for me. And at times I used to cry because I had no clue as to what the teachers were saying. It was awful. And then I think obviously, you know, I did sort of try and get past that, as in like I used to do a lot of reading and my dad used to teach me all that, so obviously, you know, I wouldn't be able to speak like entirely. But I did try, and then so I remember giving, you know, like back in those days, like class five, and in, so that I was in class five at that time. So in class five, you would give board exam.
Oh, yes.
And then so I remember giving board exam of one of the subject in Nepali. So that was like English subject, but I was so bad, and like the teachers agreed, saying like, okay, that's fine. You can answer it in Nepali. So I did my. So I passed anyway.
That's what matters.
Oh God. But that's, yeah. So that was, I think that was, that's something I would never forget, you know, the struggle that I had. So transitioning from speaking Kham to not just Nepali, but going to English.
Yeah. So then I guess from Brunei, your family moved to the UK?
Yeah, so from Brunei, like actually, because the school, it was only until class five. So I had to, once I finished my study there in class five, like, I had to go to Nepal. So I was in boarding school and stayed there until I gave my SLC.
Oh, wow. Yes, okay.
It was just me who left, and all my entire family were in Brunei.
Oh my God.
Yeah, so just because of my study. Oh my God. So I'm like,
how
honestly,
was that?
Like, it was so traumatic. Like when I was in the hostel, I used to, my mom and dad used to call me like every weekend. Oh, and I used to cry every weekend.
Oh my God. I can't even imagine. Oh, that is so sad.
Man. So my mom was so worried. She was like, okay, we'll send you your sister. So they sent my second sister to give me company.
Oh, wow. So I guess from there, did you always want to be a nurse?
No. So throughout my school, I never, ever wanted, like, I didn't even think of becoming a nurse. You know, when, because you used to have, like, what, auto? autograph and you need
autobook. Where you like put in, put out like best actor, best actress. And you put like a photo and you put out your color. Yeah.
Yes. And then you have your, you know, aim and all that, right? Yeah. And I always used to write doctor, doctor. And I always wanted to be a doctor as well.
My sister found my old one and my aim was to be a famous doctor.
Oh, okay.
So not only just a doctor, like I wanted to be a famous doctor. And this was like when you're in like grade 6, 7, you know, like what do you even know about fame or what do you even know about like, and then you're just like, I want to be a famous doctor. Yeah.
But you still wanted to be a famous doctor. Who was your favorite actor at that time?
I think if I was young, it would have been like Leonardo DiCaprio,
God,
like Titanic.
Every time, everywhere, Leonardo DiCaprio. That was me.
I was obsessed.
Same. I like,
still am. But
every time, like, you know, like Leonardo DiCaprio used to be on my every auto books. but yes, I always wanted to be a doctor. And then even like when we used to play around with friends and I used to take the role of doctor. That's how I, but I don't know, I kind of feel like maybe every Nepalese student want to be a doctor. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think that's.
Yeah. Yeah, like either doctor or lawyer, like I don't think anybody grows up thinking, oh, I want to be anything else. Like it's very, yeah.
Yeah, journalist or like, you know, a farmer or something like that, isn't it? No one had. Yeah, so that's how it was. And I would say during the school, I was very much into sports. So I played every sport and I used to be the captain of basketball team, the school.
Ooh.
But yeah, so like badminton, Chinese checker, I don't know if you remember that. Oh, all those, every game.
Did you play chungi?
Oh yeah, with the school scarf.
Yeah.
Oh God. It's beautiful memory to look back and talk back, actually. So yeah, thank you for bringing up those memories.
And the thing is, you wouldn't experience this if you hadn't grown up like in the same environment, because I think every generation has their own thing. And when I do these interviews and I talk about, and like people who've grown up in Kathmandu as well, we talk about like when we're growing up around the same time, like everything they've done, like we could have passed like paths and cross paths and stuff, right? But like, and you understand, like talk about Tamil, talk about this and that, like you understand like all those like different clubs and pubs and stuff, and you're like, oh my God, like I had a beautiful childhood.
Exactly. And you know, it just feels so nice to be sharing all this with someone who's actually been through all this, like Chungi. I mean, I don't know, like the generation now, whether they would understand what Chungi.
I don't even know what you call it in English. Like.
Yeah, no clue. I don't know. Rubber flower. But yeah, anyway, oh God, I get, please remind me because I get sidetracked. So to answer your question as to like, how did I become a nurse? So after I did finished my SLC, I wanted to apply for a medical school. But I think it's just like, even my family members and my, some of my friends, and they were, you know, saying, oh, it's a bit difficult and, you know, whether you would get it or not. And so there was all those talks around, and then I kind of, like drifted towards that. So I kind of felt like, oh, maybe I probably won't get it, and it is quite hard. So I kind of drifted away from that. And then I actually wanted to sort of, at one point, you know, because I think it was just once you finish your SLC, there's that time period where you're kind of not 100% sure as to what you want to do. And then when you have that insight into what you want to do and you're not actually going towards that, you kind of get sidetracked and get lost a little bit. But at one point, I also wanted to do journalism. And then I was in the process of doing that. But then my mom and dad, because they were in the UK at the time, and then they were like, oh, probably do nursing because it's so good. There's good scope in UK because you'll be coming here anyway. And then I was like, okay, I will do that. Yeah. So that's how I just went up.
So did you do that in Nepal or did you study nursing in the UK?
No, this is interesting. So I did a nursing in Nepal. So I did the whole three years of nursing in Nepal. So I finished, and then like as soon as I finished, I came to UK in 2007. But then I had to do here again. So we'll get to that.
Wait, so you did your nursing degree in Nepal, but then when you came to UK, you had to do your degree again, or did you just have to get registered again, or how did that work?
No, so I had to do the whole thing again. That was in 2007. That's when I qualified. Mm. So it was 3 years. So we used to have adult nursing, child nursing, midwifery, and mental health nursing, all of them all together in those 3 years time period. And you do a bit of like management as well. Like I've delivered about 19 babies. So there's a certain number of deliveries that you have to do to you finish off your second year. So I've as a student nurse, I've worked in Prasuti Griha, near the Bagmati, near the Bagmati pool. I will never forget those trainings. And then worked in psychiatric hospital as a student nurse in Lawnkill.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And if you know Lawnkill, there is a psychiatric hospital. And Gandhi Hospital, which is children's hospital in Kathmandu. We used to get a variety of exposure. And as a student nurse, you were able to do quite a lot.
So how was it when you came to UK and then realized that you had to do it all over again?
So at that point, like, my parents didn't know much as to, you know, what you would need as well. So I think they just assumed that as soon as I finished, I would be able to just work straight away. Mm-hmm. But I had done a little bit of research and I knew that you'd have to have your English test, IELTS. Yeah. And that I had done my IELTS in Nepal. Mm-hmm. So I had passed it. And so I came here thinking that, okay, you know, that should be the only thing. And maybe like, so I heard about overseas nursing program. Mm-hmm. So I did that, and then so I started, you know, for the first 1 or 2 weeks I was like, just, you know, I was so happy that I finally you know, reunited with my family. So, you know, I forgot about those. And then so after like 2-3 weeks I started sort of looking up as to, okay, so now, you know, let me get back on track and to be able to train as a nurse. And then so I started calling like Nursing and Midwifery Council. Yeah. So that's basically the governing body of the nurses and midwives in the UK. Mm. And then they were very clear about it, and they were like, oh, you have to have a year's experience at least of working and along with the IELTS, the English test. And I was like, oh, okay. So that stopped me right there because, you know, I didn't work. So as soon as I got qualified, I came here.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, that's a full stop. So I had no choice. So one of the other options was like whether I go back home, like Nepal, and then work for a year and then come back and do the overseas nurses program. Or the other option was for me to just do it whole again. And I was at that point, and it was very, very frustrating because, you know, I was not expecting that at all. So it was a very sort of crucial moment for me at that time period where I had to make the decision of whether I want to stay here and go back home.
And you had just been reunited with your family as well.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, like, so since like class five, I went, that's when I was in Nepal. And then, so the main thing that sort of made me want to stay here was because of my family. I don't want to be like juggling here and there anymore. So I want to base myself here for now at least. And then so I made that decision, and then I was like, so I also thought about, you know, even if I go to Nepal and then work for a year and then come back here, you never know, the rules might change by then. Do you know what I mean? Like it's not, it's probably won't be the same, so I'd rather do it. So I decided that, and then I did work as a healthcare assistant in a nursing home in just in local area. So I did that for 3 years because during this time period, I was sort of getting in touch with the universities around me as to what the criteria were. And obviously, you know, to be able to study as a home student, you would have to be here for 3 years at least. So which is why I ended up working as a healthcare assistant for a whole 3 years. And during that time, I had to still do the NBQ in social care, health and social care. I still had to do my literacy, numeracy, all of those. Like level two, I think I did in Pharmatech. I went to Pharmatech. Oh, God. So I did all of those whilst I was working as a healthcare assistant. And then so I got the university after 3 years. Wow. Suppose. And then, so I did my 3 years.
So again. 3 years more in university.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I had to do the whole 3 years nursing degree again. So I went to do the adult nursing.
Then you graduate, then are you a registered nurse right after?
Once you qualify, you're registered nurse. So yeah.
That's amazing. Like, you haven't given up, like, you know, after having to redo your degree and having to like work extra and just go through everything. You're still like, yep, this is what I want. I'm still doing my master's. Mm. Like, that's amazing.
I think it's just, I think what kept me going also was I knew like how much time I'd invested in Nepal, like doing that nursing 3 years. And although, you know, I never dreamed or imagined or wanted to aspire to be a nurse, like my parents just said, and I was like, okay, let me do it. So throughout those 3 years in Nepal, I think that is where I built up my foundation and my interest towards nursing. And I think that the satisfaction that you have, I mean, it sounds very cliche because everybody would say that, but you know, it's just that, I don't know, the feel that you get when you help someone, that's just uncomparable with anything else. And I think that's just throughout those experiences in Nepal, that's something that just kept me going, okay, this is, you know, something I would just want to follow throughout. And even though like I had to repeat 3 years here again, I at that point what I thought was like, oh, you know, like I'm not wasting the knowledge, the skill that I've learned in Nepal, and then all those like money my parents had invested in me, because it was so expensive. It's like private, it was private college, and then I don't know, like it was like months you had to pay so much. And I thought about that money as well. And then my parents, so that's something I that kept me going. I think I was like very determined, like, look, I started this and I've got to finish it. And I just stayed focused. Like I wasn't sidetracked by anything else or tempted to do anything else in the time period. So yeah.
That's so inspiring. And even with all this as well, Janki, like you've then are involved in like a few different side hustles, like, you know, with your family, with your husband and sister.
Yeah.
So, and like I think you said you wanted to get into journalism, and with like You Inspire TV and stuff, like you've sort of been able to do that a little bit.
Isn't
on the side.
It?
Yeah. So that's cool.
I'm glad you've noted that, because it's just something that I noted recently, and I was like, actually, you know, this was something I wanted to do at one point. And it's all sort of like coming back. It's, I mean, it's not entirely journalism, but you know what I mean? Like, it's just at least that sort of mode of communication with, you know, the public and the people around. But yeah, it's
so you
all
get the
sort of
best of both worlds.
Definitely. And I feel like, you know, you can't be just doing one thing. Do you know what I mean? Like, as an individual, as human beings, we are gifted with so many like skills, and I just feel like we have to make use of it. And you know, let's say I love what I do. You know, I love my job as a nurse and nurse practitioner now. And I would want to. I'm obviously in the process of evolving further as well. And I would want to continue to do that. But that's not the, you know, I can't just be interested in that only. You know, I have other areas that I'm interested in, and other areas that I want to experience and explore. So that's essentially what I'm doing.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I wanted to explore more on how you co-founded HempNath last year?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I have to give the credit to my sister, Ramuna. So she's very much of a person, so, you know, she travels to Nepal, you know, backwards and forwards, and she does some works, like projects in Nepal as well. And then, so when she got back from Nepal, she was like, oh, you know, I really want to do something that relates to Nepal. And then she already had thought about it, you know, like maybe starting something with like products of hemp. And we used to talk about, like, you know, we all come from Nepal. We were, you know, we were born in Nepal. We were brought up in Nepal. So we have our roots very connected to Nepal. So we just wanted to do something that we can sort of connect with our nation, and we can help the whole world connect with Nepal as well.
Yeah.
So that's how we sort of, you know, said like, okay, let's start with bags. And then so I said, do you know what, like, I'm in. Because I think I would be. She didn't even ask me in the first place, and I was like, why didn't you ask me?
You
like,
you just invited yourself.
Yeah. I was like, why didn't you ask me? Like, you know, I'm your sister. And she was like, well, I didn't know you were, you know, I don't think you're a person who is an interest in businesses. And then she's right, you know, like I never wanted to be in the business side or, you know, have companies and never ever, because I don't know, my perception, or maybe it's because of the environment, because no one is from the business background in the family. Yeah. You know, I always used to believe like, oh, business is all about making money, and, you know, it's not like I don't want to be rich. And so that was my perception of, you know, business. And I'm my apologies to, you know, people in the business and entrepreneurs, but obviously it's changed now. So I just said, you know, like, okay, maybe, you know, something that I could explore. And it's mainly because it was connected to Nepal as well. So that's why I was like, I was in as well. So that's how it started. And then, so my husband joined in, and then we have another friend who is in Hong Kong. His name is James Samang. So it's four of us. And then, so we basically design the bags here. And then, so the production, everything is done in Nepal. But also, one of the aspects that sort of made us do this was also because we want to help empower the woman in Nepal.
Yeah, I think you're definitely right in terms of like businesses. When we grow up, we're not really used to seeing businesses with purpose or like a vision. You know, you only see like even in movies and stuff, you only see all these businesses trying to like corporations, you know, like evil corporations and whatnot. But I think nowadays there are so many people and companies that have a vision, have a purpose, who want to give back to the society, empower people, and Hempnath, I think, is just like a wonderful idea of doing that. And the name itself, like Hempnath, like it's so clever.
we did have to sort of like go through quite a lot of names, and you know, we sat down on the table, it wasn't just like one, you know, okay, let's just do it. It wasn't like that. So it took us quite a while, and because it has to be something like that has meaning to it as well. And then as we are very much, you know, is the company itself is very much rooted in Nepal. So
how long did it take for the entire thing to for you guys to start selling the bags? Like how long did it take from like idea initiation to the production line, getting everything on board, registering the company, and then finally shipping like your first batch of bags, for example?
I think like from initiation to establishing a company, like all of that, I think it probably, so obviously initiation was around about a year ago or so. And then we established like the websites, everything, probably like six months or so. Within 6 months, we managed to do all of that, you know, get the first lot here and then start selling and all of that. So I think, even less than 6 months, actually.
So you're a nurse practitioner and you're doing your part-time master's. You have your own businesses. You're doing different things. How do you manage time?
So I think it's all about staying focused. You know, if you know, like, okay, so, you know, I might be doing this, that, but, you know, so it's just making sure that I'm giving time to each of them.
Yeah. But then, like, you, not only just the jobs, like, you need to spend time with your family and then yourself.
Yeah.
Like, how do you prioritize yourself?
So that's a good question. So when I have my, like, day off, I do take them as like day off. So, you know, on my every day off, I do my meditation, 20-minute meditation in the morning and a bit of stretching. And normally in the evenings, I tend to go for a run and walk because there's no gym now. So that's what I do. And then during the day, so, you know, throughout the day when I at least one day I try not to do anything related to my uni or my work or like inspirative interviews or Hempnath, anything like that. So it's just prioritizing what you want to do. And I set up my like day-to-day goals every day. So like for tomorrow, even if it's my day off, you know, I would still do it. I do it on an everyday basis, and I've been doing for like years. So what I do is for tomorrow, I plan today. Like I have my to-do list for every day. So that's like, I just basically just chill out and, you know, just spend time with the families and do that. So I'm not sort of, you know, like, okay, I'm on my laptop every sort of every time or anything like that.
Just working all the time.
No, I can't be like that.
I think sometimes just like staying in bed and doing absolutely nothing, or just like binging on shows, or like reading a book, and like just being separated from everything else is the best thing you can do, even if that's for like half an hour or the whole day, doesn't matter. Like, I think that really gets me, like, gives me that reset that I need.
Yeah, definitely. Yes.
So like we discussed about how you've got sort of like the best of both worlds in terms of conventional and unconventional. If you have to define what success is, how would you define it?
So I think like my ultimate success would be to be able to become the best version of myself and, you know, explore my abilities fully.
Mm.
But that is not, I don't think like that is possible. It's just being in that journey towards having that success. But that doesn't mean like, you know, I don't, you know, consider myself successful, or I don't see success in any of these, you know, daily activities. I still do, you know, for example, if I do my meditation today, I take that as success. You know, if I get to do my, you know, works that I intend to do, or take, even if my one to-do list, that's success. So, you know, to me, it's just that I think the contentment and the peacefulness that you get from your day-to-day activities, or, you know, from like within.
Yeah. Now, if you could give any advice to someone who's far away from home, are sort of like struggling to find their paths, what would that be?
It can be, obviously, you know, it can be difficult, and that's what life is all about. You know, it's ups and downs, and, you know, tomorrow would be great, today might be not so great, and, you know, so you are bound to go through all those periods, and you are bound to go through the period of feeling lost and, you know, not knowing what to do, and that's fine. You know, you just have to go through it, and if you're going through any hardships, the only way out is to go through that, because you know, if you step back, you're just delaying from, you know, becoming, you know, who you could be, or your potentials. But also, you know, you have to be willing to seek for help from other people, like friends and families, and just be open and be vulnerable about it, you know. And that's what makes your journey special.
And as you said, it could be like struggles, it could be anything, but you just keep moving forward, and that's how you get past it.
Definitely. And the main thing is, it's just the self-belief. You just have to believe in yourself, and, you know, there'll be a lot of noises around you,
of course,
but you just have to choose which noise to sort of
you listen to,
and which not to sort of listen to, or which just to pretend as if you're listening to. So you know, the choice is ours, isn't it? Whatever we do.
Well, thank you so much for your time today. Thank you for sharing your beautiful story. Like, I can't believe like we played Joongi, like, you know, all these different things. It's so good connecting with people as well, and to like learn the stories, as you said. So thank you so much.
No, thank you. I mean, like, first of all, I still can't believe that, you know, I'm being interviewed here. Thank you for giving opportunity for someone, you know, very ordinary person like me.
Oh, please.
No, and, you know, thank you for believing or seeing that sort of, you know, I don't know, inspirational journey in me that made you approach me. So yeah, thank you so much, and I'm sure you will be giving, you know, many more opportunities to many more people like myself, you know, the opportunity to share their journey and inspire.
Yeah.
And my best wishes, Anne. You are doing amazing.
Thank you.
And keep doing it.
Once this is over, we'll have to meet and compete.
Yeah, Juni.
Which?
Bring your auto book.
You'll have to sign it. All right. So thank you again. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Yeah, we do.
As always, if you enjoy these conversations, please share with your friends and family. The screenshots you've been sharing with key insights on the episodes and tagging us at hamro.yatra on Instagram truly make my day. So thank you, and keep them coming.